My name is Megan Lloyd, and I'm the editor of the Sunday Mail, and I'm also the president of the South Australian Press Club. And I'd like to welcome you all here today, and thank you for supporting the Press Club. I'd like to acknowledge our guest speaker, the Premier of South Australia, the Honourable Jay Weatherill, who is joining us today. And that can explain, obviously, the large turnout that we have. I'd also like to welcome the Honourable Martin Hamilton-Smith, the Member for Waite, and Steve Georgianis, the Federal Member for Hindmarsh. Our Press Club greatly depends on its sponsors, many of whom are behind me today, being, of course, Adelaide's Media. I'd also like to welcome Kim Rogers, Group Manager of Telstra, who are indeed a long-standing supporter of the Press Club, and Peter Campbell from Kelly & Co Lawyers, who have also become supporters of the Press Club. We'll be enjoying wines today from Jacobs Creek and SA Brewing, who are also long-time supporters of the SA Press Club. I would also like to acknowledge my colleagues from Adelaide's Media, working colleagues who are here today, and welcome them as well. Just a few housekeeping matters before we will have a main course and then hear from our guest speaker. On your tables is our raffle tickets, three for $5. We have our $300 voucher from Jeff Timms Manufacturing Jewellers. And thank you, Jeff, who's normally here but is, I think, on the road back from WA as we speak. We have a carton of beer from SA Brewing, which looks like James Bogue's over there, if I know my beer label. And I think we've also got some CDs. If you're a Cold Chisel fan, we have a latest CD from Cold Chisel. I would also just like to remind you that on Friday, November the 18th, at the Adelaide Hilton is the SA Press Club's annual media awards. So those of you who would like to support Adelaide's media and see the finest rewarded for their efforts, I invite you to join us on the night. It should be a fantastic evening. I think we've had nearly 200 entries in the awards this year, so there is certainly quite a bit of competition for the awards that are on offer. I also remind you that bookings are now being taken for our Monday, January the 16th lunch, which has Phil Liggett and Paul Sherwin, who are, of course, the commentators on SBS for the Tour de France and are also over here for the Tour Down Under. There are many people who are fans of this event, and that is usually always a sellout. So if you would like to attend, I suggest that you get in early. I'll be back after the main course to introduce the Premier. Thank you. So this afternoon we have the pleasure to hear from Jay Weatherill, who is the 45th Premier of South Australia and leader of the Labor Party in South Australia. He was born and educated in Adelaide's western suburbs. Matriculated, now there's a word you don't hear very much anymore, from Henley High. A lawyer, he was practising until 2002 when at age 38 he was elected the member for Cheltenham. His political life has so far been completely on the government front benches. So that means he's yet to feel the desperation of opposition or life on a backbench. Mr. Weatherill went straight into cabinet once elected. I thought it was worth just reviewing all the portfolios that he's actually held as well. He's been Minister for Local Government, Minister for Urban Development and Planning, Minister for Administrative Services, for Government Enterprise, Minister for Gambling, Minister for Families and Communities, Minister for Housing, for Ageing, for Disability, Minister for Aboriginal Affairs and Reconciliation, Minister assisting the Premier in Cabinet Business and Public Sector Management, Minister for Education, for Science and Information Technology, and now Premier and Minister for State Development. I just want to return before we hear from the Premier, to return briefly to 2002 and a personal memory. I first met Jay Weatherill after the February election in that year. We had lunch at the Beijing restaurant with my then editor Des Ryan and the young minister's press secretary, who from memory was Sky Laris. The Beijing, would have been Des's choice, was the kind of place that you have lunch when you don't want anyone to know who you're having lunch with. was quiet, it's out of the way, and it still has the best stuffed trout. And usually the only other people in the restaurant are Peggy Pearson and Peter Goldsworthy, who are sitting at another table. The young minister was very keen to impress upon us his social justice beliefs and that everything should be measured against its social justice outcomes. While he was keen, he was local government minister then, obviously, and while he was keen in our views on local government, I did get the impression that this was going to be a stepping stone portfolio. His aspirations were elsewhere. Yet he must have listened, because within months he had legislation drafted, and in his last act as local government minister, which was only a few months down the track at the end of the year, saw through amendments to tighten confidentiality provisions in the Local Government Act to make the business of councils a lot more transparent. That earned him the rare endorsement of Messenger newspapers at the time. Ladies and gentlemen, the Premier.
Well, thank you, Megan, for those kind words, and look forward to the Sunday Mail editorial this week. Can I acknowledge my parliamentary colleagues, Mr. Martin Howarden-Smith, the Shadow Minister for Industry and Trade, my federal colleague, Mr. Steve Georgianis, member for Hindmarsh, Press Club members, sponsors, ladies and gentlemen. And I also acknowledge that we gather today here on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people. Well, yesterday we announced that the redevelopment contract for the Adelaide Oval was awarded. And for me, thinking back on the history of this decision to upgrade the Oval, the overwhelming enduring memory for me was watching the images of some of the SACA members as they walked out from the vote when they made the decision to press ahead. And I suppose the first thing that struck me is there was a group of young people that walked out, and I was expecting something slightly different from the SACA members. But what also struck me was their sense of excitement about the decision, the sense of possibility of what might happen with the upgraded Oval. And I remember a young man in particular stood up and said how excited he was about sport coming back into the centre of the city. And since that time, and over the period that I've had in the lead-up to taking on this role, I've met dozens of South Australians, but a number of South Australians that have spoken to me about their ambitions for the city. A number of them have been business leaders, a number of them have been community leaders, but the one clear and consistent message from all of them has been the importance of the city to South Australia's economic prospects. And these don't just come from a more vibrant city and the obvious benefits of having the sport back in the city in that way, but really the sense of pride in our city, our principal asset, and the spillover effect that that's having on our sense as a community. It affects our mindset, our sense of what's possible, not only for the city but for the state. And it affects a lot of decisions, young people deciding whether this is the place that's got enough vibrancy for them to actually stay here. And it affects other decisions like business executives that businesses in South Australia might be seeking to recruit, and they're asking the question, will you come and work in Adelaide? And those executives in Sydney and Melbourne are wondering about whether they should come to Adelaide. These are the decisions that are directly affected by the vibrancy of our city. So that the renewal of Adelaide Oval is a tremendously exciting project, and obviously it itself has its own intrinsic benefits. It's bringing together one of our most popular sports and all of their supporters into the heart of the city. But it is coupled with a range of other very important developments in that precinct. The redevelopment of our riverbank, the new hospital and medical research centre, which will bring in excess of 5,000 people into that precinct. And you can't put that number of people into a place without it making a massive difference to that area. It will be a new lease of life on the centre of Adelaide. And just think about it. It's a great prospect, thinking of thousands of people moving through the city, enjoying and celebrating not only their teams, but also everything Adelaide has to offer. Beautiful parklands, great restaurants, and the terrific atmosphere of just being around other people in a revitalised city centre. And of course, it also takes us back and renews that great football tradition at Adelaide Oval. The revitalisation of our city will be a core part of our government's future work. This commitment reflects the simple fact that the renewal of the Oval and the Riverbank Precinct, the energy and vibrancy of our city centre, is vital not just to our city but to our state. I think it's well accepted now that regions compete on the attractiveness of their capitals, of their cities. So it's a competitive advantage for any region to have a city that people want to live in. We all know the great feeling that we get around festival time, that great buzz of whenever there's a big open-air event, thousands of people joining in, just really bringing the city alive. And that's what we want more often, not just one week in the year, not even every other year, but every week. We want people using and really enjoying the beautiful and central place that is the city riverbank. We don't want a city that turns its back on the river. We want a place where people can come together, families and friends, to enjoy a lifestyle which is so renowned in South Australia. And we really want to build on the great promise of this city. It's not complete. And we want to build on the promise to have a capital that's both exciting and energetic at its heart, but still a great place for South Australians to live. But these changes don't just happen by themselves. What we announced last week was some decisions which will renew government. Because we know that whether or not these things happen, this ambition for the city happens, will depend on the decisions we make as a government, decisions we make as a community. And some of the more important decisions we will make as a government are those that we made last week, the reorganisation of agencies and portfolios. Now, I appreciate for many this isn't the most riveting topic imaginable, but it's really important that agencies are properly aligned to the big issues and that ministers have responsibilities that line up with their more effectively with the way in which their portfolios are constructed. That's why one of our first decisions was to rationalise and consolidate both ministerial portfolios and state agencies across government. Because if we want to live in a great city, we must get the underpinnings right. In particular, we need a state government whose very structure is designed to support what we value most. Now, the changes we've made include bringing together manufacturing and business and resources and energy. We did this in recognition of the fundamental connections in our economy between the mining boom and our manufacturing and service sectors. Bringing those arms of government together best enables us to seize the opportunities for advanced manufacturing and service industries that the mining boom will bring. It will also enable us to respond to the challenges that that same mining boom will pose for those industries. We've also brought together regional development, primary industries, food production and tourism so that we can provide more effective policies for regional South Australia. So the first time a regions department that capitalises on the unique blend of regional food, wine production and tourism. Also, for the first time, all of the agencies responsible for caring and supporting children will be brought together in a single body. Hasn't been done anywhere else in Australia. The connecting force for this agency will be education. It reflects my profound conviction that the most effective way for us to overcome disadvantage and facilitate a truly productive community is to provide support and investment right from the start. I've also added responsibility for Aboriginal Affairs to the Minister for Environment so that we can take advantage of the really positive opportunities which are being presented by the Caring for Country initiatives. But of most importance to the future of our city is the new portfolio that brings together transport, infrastructure, housing and urban development under one minister. And to support this portfolio, we've formed an integrated planning, transport and infrastructure agency. Along with the key housing agencies, Land Management Corporation, the South Australian Housing Trust, we've brought together all those parts of government that are responsible for the renewal and development of our cities and towns. This recognises both the importance but also the complexity of urban development. It's not simply enough to have agencies that are responsible for various components of development, land releases, housing, transport, and the use of public spaces. It's just as important, actually more important, for these agencies to be properly coordinated. The components of urban development that I spoke about just don't work in isolation. They only work in conjunction with each other. You can't separate housing, where and what it is, from the transport that serves it. You can't separate new development areas from the infrastructure that supports them. And therefore, you shouldn't separate the agencies each from the other. But great cities are more than buildings. There is much about the spaces between buildings. It's these spaces that become the great places of our city, where people gather to walk, to enjoy themselves, or just to sit and watch. As one of the world's great leading urban designers, Jan Gehl, who has been in Adelaide sharing his wisdom with us, has said, people go to where people are. And this city has been an extraordinary gift to the people of South Australia. 175 years ago, we were given this extraordinary plan, this fantastic connection between city and its relationship to the country, beautifully nestled between the hills and the sea, flanked by these beautiful vineyards. This is an extraordinarily beautifully laid out city. It is our key asset. No one can take it away from us. It's ours. But we have to add some value to it. We have to protect what we love about it, but finish it. And part of finishing it is the vibrancy of the centre. We can enjoy our quiet suburbs. We can enjoy the livability of being in our peaceful, safe suburbs, which is so much part of the Adelaide experience. But we can dip into the centre of something exciting that allows us to understand that we live in a truly cosmopolitan city. So our Riverbank precinct is part of that. And I must say, it can't just be good or even excellent. It must be superb. And we have to make sure that we use every opportunity to ensure that's the case. It must be the kind of place that visitors come to and are really inspired by and leave with a sense of envy, wishing that they too could have a public space like this in their city. And a great city is about having the best of both worlds, coming to the centre of the city, but also being able to go home to somewhere more peaceful. It's absolutely vital that we shouldn't step away from our responsibility to protect those things, but at the same time, we also have to grapple with the big public policy issues, such as managing growth. After all, people expect government to have the interests of the city and the state at heart. They expect government to use its capacity both to catalyse investment and direct growth, but crucially, I believe, to use its capacity to bring the community with it. And it's the government's role to make sure that we keep what we value most about our lives in Adelaide, the livability of our state. And we've always been proud of that quality of life. How and where we live, whether we can live in a house that suits our needs, receive support for our family and get a good education for our kids, what keeps us safe, how we get around, all of those things have been our strengths. But our challenge now is keeping this livability as we face both the challenges and opportunities that come with the tremendous growth that we're now facing. We're tackling this growth, and one of the key drivers for doing that is our 30-year plan for Greater Adelaide. This clearly recognises that there will be pressures that come to bear on us as our economy and population grow, but it sets out measures for managing those pressures. Of course, all this work isn't easy, not least because development by its nature requires decisions about what will happen, where it will go, when it will happen. These decisions, in their turn, result in changes that can often have very substantial effects on people's lives. And a fundamental question for our government, indeed for all governments, is how we make these decisions both with and for the community. One very important step is to maintain confidence in government decision-making. That's why I've separated planning from development at a ministerial level. This will ensure that planning responsibility, the decisions about land use that underpin all activities in our state, will be separate from and not subordinated to development. Of course, these two imperatives need to work closely together, but a decisive step to separate one process from the other will clearly demonstrate the reasons behind the decisions we make. But we also want to put the integrity of the decisions that we make beyond doubt. That's why we'll be introducing an independent commission against corruption for South Australia. South Australia has not seen endemic corruption, but nevertheless, we must ensure that the community has confidence in the decisions that governments make on their behalf. There must be no question but that all government decisions are made in the interests of all South Australians and for no other reason. But we've got to do better than that. Providing a basic level of confidence in government decisions isn't enough. We need to recognise that those decisions are at their best when they're the result of a mature dialogue between governments and communities. And nowhere could this be more important than in relation to how our cities grow and prosper. Now, this isn't a recipe for an endless conversation, but it is a recipe for an honest dialogue with the community. Because if you don't have that dialogue, you keep repeating and rehearsing these debates over and over again on every single development that you face. I've already made it clear that my government will listen better to the concerns and views of the South Australian community. It's vitally important that governments ensure people in the community understand the context of the decisions that are being made. We've got to do a better job at providing information, of letting people see the consequences of all the choices that are before us. Too often, the first the community hears about a problem is through the answer that we give them. Obviously, we'll be engaging with the community in a number of different ways, but one of them will be through you, through the mainstream media. Many of you here today are working journalists, and I'd like to say that I'm also serious about providing information to you in that way. I'm keen to discuss what the problems and the issues are, what the choices we have, not just to tell you when our final decision is made in a series of nicely packaged media opportunities. I want to recalibrate the relationship we have with the media because you play a crucial role in providing information to all South Australians. Of course, your role isn't just to convey a message. I certainly respect your role to analyse and critique government policy. But what I do hope, as we renew the community's role in our democracy and decision-making, that your part in this will become increasingly more important. What we will do as a government is to treat people with respect. We will explain decisions to them. We will create a richer public debate about our future. And this is a future living in a great place where we can bring up our children, move easily around and live in a way that suits our needs. We want an energetic city with a real sense of excitement about it. We want a city that draws people together through shared aspirations and shared values. We want to keep South Australians in South Australia for all that we have to offer, and we'll be focusing on new ways in which we can revitalise the city and state to make sure this happens. In a state such as ours, we need to focus our resources rather than spread them thinly. We need to look closely at where government can make the biggest difference and focus our energies and resources there. Certainly, as I said at the outset, revitalising Adelaide will continue to be our priority because it's the centre of our city that has a place in our identity, whether we visit occasionally or daily. South Australia is on the threshold of great things, but to reach our full potential, we need a capital city which is regarded as everybody's city. We need to carefully knit together the vital inner city construction we've already begun, the hospital, the Oval, the convention centre upgrade, the medical research facility and the rebuilt public transport system. And all of this in a way that respects our heritage and the things that we love most about our city. We're looking forward to utilising new forces, particularly the Integrated Design Commission, and revitalising old ones, including the Capital City Committee. Yesterday I met with the Lord Mayor and the Integrated Design Commissioner and communicated my desire to them to make the city a focus for our government, to make sure the city precincts are everything they've always had the potential to be. To this end, I'm looking forward to working with the Lord Mayor on the Capital City Committee, along with the Deputy Premier as Minister for Planning and Patrick Conlon as Minister for Housing and Urban Development. We want to revitalise this important institution and direct it to this effort. I'm equally committed to making sure the people of Adelaide can enjoy the best of both worlds, an exciting city and suburbs not only which house us but enable us to have connected and fulfilling lives. And to achieve this, I look forward to a new relationship between the government and the South Australian community, which will underpin the decisions we make for the future of our city and state. Thank you.
Oh, okay. We've got a roving microphone, have we? I can't. Oh, it's over here? Good. Thanks, Lainey. Thanks, Lainey. We have a microphone over here to the right. So obviously the normal format for the press club is to take questions from the floor. Usually we like to invite the working journalists up to the microphone first, and then after that, anyone else who would like to ask the Premier questions. So the floor is... The microphone is over here.
Hi, Premier. Brad Crouch from the Sunday Mail. The future sounds pretty exciting. Just wondering, though, there's a lot of people receiving their water bills at the moment and wondering how they're going to pay them, particularly older people who've seen their property values rise through no fault of their own. Their water bill is largely based on property values, and even though a lot of people are using almost no water, they're still being slugged amounts that they really can't afford. I know it's a small issue compared to the big things you've been talking about, but this is back pocket stuff. What can you do?
Well, I think you make a good point, Brad. This is the thing that I addressed at the state convention, that in a sense I spoke about some South Australians I spoke to about the vibrancy of the city and how excited they were about the future of the city. But on the weekend I spoke about a pensioner that I spoke to who said, as I told the convention, that she's never felt less secure in the whole of her life. So there's no doubt that there are enormous pressures on these South Australians. And the two things are happening at the same time. Incredibly confident set of South Australians and some people that are feeling incredibly insecure. Look, I don't have an answer for you today except to say that we shouldn't be doing things that make it worse. Obviously, it's an issue that we're going to have to grapple with.
Premier Adam Todd from 10 News. You've spoken a lot about listening, and in that spirit, I'll read a quote that might sound a bit familiar. Labor will be a government that's on your side. We've listened, we've learned. Now, that was Mike Rann when he was like you, a new Premier in 2002. So my question is, why should South Australians believe you'll keep your pledge to listen if Mike Rann lost his job because he didn't?
All parties have to renew, and we have. And I suspect if we don't get that right, we'll be rejected at the next election. It's a pretty simple equation. We'll try and govern in the best interests of the community. If we don't listen and we don't demonstrate that we've heard, we won't be around any longer. So it's a question of us changing or the electorate changing us.
Premier, Nick Harmson from ABC News. You're taking over in the top job at a time when the budget is going through some renewed pressures. You still have the bulk of Kevin Foley's savings to get through, and revenues have taken a hit in recent times with the slowing property market and slowing retail sector. What will be your strategy going into the mid-year budget review and next year's budget to deal with that decline in the state's finances? Would you seek to delay the return to surplus, or will you seek to cut harder?
Look, there's no doubt that there are pressures, and there's no doubt that many of those are external, so they'll be beyond our control. My overall position in relation to budget management is that it will be prudent financial management. I don't have any specific propositions. We haven't begun the exercise, the preparation of the next budget. The mid-year budget review will demonstrate where we are, or give a snapshot at our performance, and we'll evaluate the position from there.
Premier Graham Archer from Today Tonight, Channel 7. Look, given that you have a background as a working lawyer, as does the Attorney General, I'm wondering if you have in mind a more principled approach to the separation of powers, the respect for due process than has been evident in the previous administration, and that's not to say that being tough on crime necessarily means that due process has to be thrown by the wayside.
Well, community safety is a priority for me. You'll get no compromise on the safety of the community from me. In relation to, I believe in equality before the law. I think everybody should be treated. The law should apply in equal effect to all of its citizens. Those fundamental principles, I think, are shared by everybody in our government.
Premier Chris Russell from the Advertiser. Before he left, Mike Rann said that there were two issues that he wanted to raise at the National Convention in December from South Australia. He wanted to see a change in the policies to do with same-sex marriage, and he also wanted to seek a change to the policy regarding uranium exports to India. Are those issues that either you yourself will take to the National Convention, or you will encourage other South Australian delegates to show leadership and seek change on the national policy platform?
Yes, I'm a delegate to the National Convention by virtue of the position I hold as leader of the Labor Party. In relation to same-sex marriage, I support it. In relation to uranium sales to India, I haven't got a position on that yet, except to say that it'll be guided by what's in the best interests of South Australia. I understand the issues are about the signatory or otherwise of a nuclear non-proliferation treaty by India, which it hasn't signed and will be unlikely to sign. These are international issues. I don't think I'll be entering in the debate, offering opinions about questions of international relations, although I will have to form a view before I get to conference about my attitude to those matters. I understand that even should the National Conference clear the way for India to receive uranium from Australia, there would still need to be a new international treaty negotiated for the purposes of ensuring safeguards. But that's the extent to which I'm briefed on the issue.
Hi, Lainey Anderson from the Sunday Mail. Sorry, these aren't quite as important as selling uranium to India, but I have two questions. The first one, if the operators of the Guggenheim said they wanted to fully fund an art gallery in the parklands, would you say yes or no? And number two, what do your most important constituents, your daughter and kids, say about your performance as Premier so far?
Taking the second question first, they did sit down at a dinner the other day and said to a stranger, "We're Jay's girls," which was slightly embarrassing, but he didn't know what they were talking about. So the word obviously hasn't got out very far. Somebody's prepared to pay for something, a piece of public infrastructure. They're prepared to pay their own money for it. Well, I'd be very interested to hear such a proposition and first establish that that could be true. It's so rarely ever done. But I don't know. You'd have to entertain the specific proposal. I mean, obviously the parklands have their own character, and we wouldn't want to do anything to disturb the nature of those parklands. But, you know, we have, of course, there are exceptions. We have some institutions already on our parklands, or what were formerly parklands. So you'd have to see the price proposal and where it was located.
Afternoon, Premier. Mike Smithson from Channel 7. You've taken a pretty obvious slap at the Premier and the way that he and the previous administration, which you were part of, have dealt with media issues, and I presume that goes over a number of years. And I've heard you say that more than once this week, so presumably it's quite deliberate. During this endless mentoring, and if you'd like to perhaps tell us how much mentoring there was with the Premier before he left office in that three-month period, did you or he discuss the media strategy and where you thought it went wrong beforehand?
Look, I don't think it's fair to say that this was directed at any one individual. As you've noted, I've been part of this government for the last 10 years. It's as much about how I operate as anybody else operates. Frankly, I think you're all sick of it. We're all sick of it, and we'd like to find another way of doing it. So I don't necessarily I'm not pointing the question at...
What are we sick of, exactly?
I think you're pretty disappointed in us. That's my overwhelming impression. And we try, I think politicians try and package things up in a way that they think will get their message across. So we are trying to anticipate your needs. I don't think it works for anyone. And most of all, I think the community are pretty sick of a, you know, pre-packaged, homogenised sort of product, which seems to lack the any sort of authenticity about it. And, you know, I could go on at length about this, but I think you all know what I'm talking about.
Just the mentoring question, Premier. How much was there?
Well, look, we had regular conversations during that 10-week period, and I've got to say it was a very beneficial period for me to prepare for the role.
Premier Greg Kelton from the Advertiser, you spoke at length today about revitalising the city, and you talked about the Riverbank project, but obviously there's much more to the city than the Riverbank project.
Sure.
Is the government going to put its money where its mouth is and actually spend some money to get some projects apart from the Riverbank up and running, like the tram? Are you going to contribute anything towards Arundel Mall or the Victoria Square redevelopment?
Yeah. Look, I mean, part of what I was trying to say was this notion of critical mass. I mean, a spectacular example of what not to do is to put the entertainment centre down at Hindmarsh, where you could have actually have kept all of that investment and that vibrancy and critical mass in one place. Because the truth is that, as I quoted, the people go to where people are. There has to be a sense of place and vibrancy and critical mass before you actually then attract other people. And so I think there is something important about focusing on this precinct, because there is so much investment that is going into this place. So I think the mall obviously is very important because it's very close and very closely connected. But all of the laneways that lead into North Terrace, you only need to see what some cities have done with their laneways, the exciting possibilities that exist to revitalise those places, making them much more attractive places for people. That's what I mean about focusing our effort, and we have made some choices about Victoria Square as opposed to other parts of the city, and that's where our focus is going to be.
Hi, Heather Kennett from the Sunday Mail. On the weekend you announced plans to modify the deeply unpopular policy on hospital paid parking at public hospitals. However, community groups I speak to still feel quite confident that you'll go a little bit further and abolish it altogether. Do you plan to give any more ground on this policy?
No.
Hi, Alice Montbreeze from the Sunday Mail. The release of the Disability Blueprint coincided with your appointment as Premier and the disbanding of the Social Inclusion Unit. Can I ask you for your thoughts on the blueprint, particularly given your previous experiences as Minister for Disabilities? And at the moment, there are no costings. Can you explain how the government plans to take this blueprint forward?
Okay. I have a real passion for disability services as being a former minister. One of the things that we commenced when I was in that role was the idea of people with disabilities having more control over the funding that's allocated, and rather than the money being given to an agency and they have to accept the service that's provided, they're allocated the funding and they make choices about what they need and what those services would look like, including making informal arrangements about how they should be cared for. That's at the heart of the blueprint, and I'm very supportive of that approach and very keen to roll it out. Of course, that's just the how. There's also how much. There's no doubt that there needs to be extra resources into disability services. That needs to come from us, but there also is an important contribution that the Commonwealth Government is considering through the National Disability Insurance Scheme, which will be another important component of how we meet the needs of people with disabilities.
So just a further question. In terms of some of the other recommendations, such as a new Disability Act, do you have a time frame on when you plan to bring this in?
No, we haven't responded to that report yet, so Cabinet hasn't considered the detail of the report.
Mr Premier, Jane Doyle from 7 News and 5AA. This morning on our radio program, we discussed the announcement yesterday of the beginning of the building of the Adelaide Oval redevelopment, which is, as you mentioned earlier, a very exciting thing. I'd like to be reassured for those that perhaps in the community see the Adelaide Oval as just the beginning of that revitalised project for the riverbank, that the footbridge will be built. Will it? And yes. Will it be built in time for the opening of that redevelopment?
Yes, that's certainly the plan, yes.
So they'll both open by 2014?
Yes.
Outstanding. Well done.
Before we wrap up, is there anyone else that would like? Yet? Ralph?
Thank you, Premier. Bulamakenka News. A readership of one rivals the Advertiser. Premier, you've had a good week, and I congratulate you on that. And I think you really do mean what you actually say, so that is a huge plus. And you've talked about the city being vibrant and all the rest of it. I won't repeat all the words you've used. Is there any chance that you might legislate to allow Adelaide citizens to be able to shop on public holidays, non-religious or Anzac Day, for example, public holidays, and tell the shoppies to go to buggery? Thank you.
Well, we'll have to see what we do on all that.
Premier Rick Allard, I'm a very proud South Australian. I think that it would be true to say that there wouldn't be a very vibrant city around the world that doesn't have a successful and vibrant arts sector, arts and cultural sector. I think I read in the press that you and the Treasurer were not embracing of the arts, and I'd just like to ask you whether you accept the importance of the arts to making Adelaide a very livable city and a very exciting city to be in.
Thanks, Rick, and thanks for the opportunity to talk about that. I'm a passionate supporter of the arts. I think it's absolutely central to a vibrant city. I think that the arts and creativity and the sorts of citizens that we need to create to be part of our future are absolutely vital. I don't think you can have a vibrant city without a vibrant arts culture. And in a way, we have so much to celebrate about the arts. It's just that it all seems to be concentrated in a very short period of time. So we want the city to come alive for a much extended period of the year. It's interesting that if you look at the way in which cities do regenerate, the first people that often come in are arts communities, often to old buildings. And some of the planning rules and the way our heritage legislation operates can militate against that. So that's something that I'm interested in exploring. I'm a very strong supporter of the arts. And I think there was a bit of mischief made of some flippant remarks that the Treasurer made about... we won't go into it. But it was the last day of school, I think, in the last session of Parliament. And I think the Treasurer made some remarks about the 2/3 of the arts collection was never on view, and he thought it could be profitably liquidated. And our Treasurer joined in a humorous way, but is now probably regretting that he said that.
Premier Ian Smith of Henley Beach South. In relation to the vibrancy of the city and the positive future you put forward, there are some steps which don't require costs and outlays from government, which are fundamental to driving business. One is a curfew-free airport, whether you would ever take that on. A curfew-free airport, Adelaide Airport. And the other is a very, very wholesale change of councils and council amalgamations. Could you give us your views on both?
Yeah. Look, on the first thing, Steve Georgianis has just swallowed his fork. So, on the second thing, I suppose the approach, the starting point for me is the Capital City Committee. There is an interesting process underway, which I'm going to get wrong, Adelaide 5000, is it? 5000 plus, which is a collaboration between the Adelaide City Council and all of the inner ring councils around a joint collaborative planning exercise, really about the vibrancy of the committee supervised by the Integrated Design Commission. I'd like to explore, the limits of that, although I do accept what you say, that there might be some structural barriers
But I want to give the benefit of the doubt to the City Council and the inner ring councils at this stage.
Oh, my sleep box. Hang on. Hi, Jane Lehman, mother of three, one of which is disabled. I was interested in that in your overview of the future vibrant, lovely place that Adelaide is going to become, that there was no discussion of the changes that you've instigated with a higher focus on social inclusion. And would be interested to know what you think needs to change to ensure that people with disabilities and also their families are able to enjoy that future just as richly as everybody else, and not just around ramps and infrastructure, but the broader issues that you're well aware of from your past portfolios.
Thanks, Jane. Look, I mean, when I talk about places for people, I talk about all. I mean, all people, people with disabilities, people from all walks of life and background. I did mention earlier what I think is the single most important contribution that we can make to addressing disadvantage in whatever form it takes, and that is investing early. And so, the whole child development focus is about ensuring that from the earliest time we're investing our resources to make sure that every one of our children has the best possible chance in life. And that's a profoundly important public policy agenda for children with disabilities. But I suppose my remarks were intended to be all-embracing for all South Australians.
One of the dangers is that the intensive things will happen early, but the people caught in the middle may well get lost, and so with the release of the blueprint, it was very obvious that there was a focus on those newly into the service, as well as at the other end of the service. But I'm hoping there'll be a focus within the other groups as well.
I've already made clear my commitment to the blueprint.
I might just finish by asking you, no doubt in 90 days or so there'll be stories about your first 100 days and assessments of that. I was wondering if we, you know, looking with some now, hypothetically, how you would like to be perceived in 100 days, what you think the rest of us will write about you then or publish about you?
Well, I don't intend to do the 100-day thing, but what I am interested in at the end of all of this is that people might look back and say that South Australia is a more confident place than it is now, a quiet confidence about our place in the world, not this idea that we have to compare ourselves endlessly with other places, but just a sure and certain knowledge that this is a wonderful place to live and that and that's not something we need to prove to anybody except to ourselves.
On behalf of everyone, thank you very much, Premier. I'll be back shortly to do the raffle draw. Premier leapt off the stage quickly before I was a chance to give him a thank you present from the press club, but I will carry that down for him. And we'll be back shortly, as I said, with the raffle. Enjoy your dessert.